At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
Survivor Specialists are back. I got it right this time. We are the Survivor Specialists. If you just came from The Amazing Race, I called us the Survivor Specialists over on The Amazing Race. But here we're talking Survivor, and we're rewinding it back, taking moments from this week's episode and comparing them to moments in past Survivor episodes. And this was a fun one. We were able to kind of pick and choose a lot, which is not always something that we get to do because we get locked in a little bit with some examples. But I'm excited to dive into this episode.
Yeah, in contrast to what we said on the podcast last week, where sometimes in the new era, we get this episode that just, you know, is distinctly new era or has covered something we've already talked about, so we don't have anything else to really talk about. This era, or this episode, this week, which, I mean, in my opinion, is the best episode of the season so far. I don't think that's a fairly shocking opinion for most people. I think most people are kind of in that same boat. But it gave us so many things to harken back on. It gave us surprising twists. I mean, obviously, we knew right after last week's episode that we were going to have a second tribe swap this week, and we were going to get three tribes of four, which led to some interesting things. But other than that, like, just there was more. This is the first episode in the season I felt that had, like, real dynamic gameplay happening. It was the first time that we really kind of started getting to know some of these people. I mean, McKenna, you messaged me when Sophie got her, when Sophie S got her first confessional, and then I messaged you. That's two now. So you know it's a big episode when all of a sudden we're hearing from Sophie S too.
It just felt like I might have heard from her before, but like I didn't remember it. So it feels like she has had zero confessionals in six episodes because honestly, she's been winning, but I just noticed it today because all of a sudden we haven't been hearing from her. But she was here this episode. Great. So for our outwit this episode, we are talking about overplaying before the merge and kind of wanting and making too much happen when there is an easy way out.
Yeah, this is obviously inspired by Shannon, and it's kind of, it's really hard for us to come up with, like McKenna said, right? Like, she gives us a long explanation of what this topic is because we couldn't really make a concise topic for it because it's really hard to sum up exactly what Shannon's game has been up to this point and how it's just happened in the second swap to change everything a little bit, and just the dynamic changed so much. We saw her on the last iteration of Kella saying, oh, hey, you know, it's me or Sage, so take Sage, please, like, get her out of there. And then as soon as they swap to this new tribe and she's still with Sage, she's trying to be friends with her again. And it really felt like she was just pushing this envelope a little too much, where she was coming off as like the, yes, totally, I'm OG Uli strong, but she's actually more committed to the new Kella tribe, but the person from her new Kella tribe that's on the tribe is the person she's been throwing under the bus for the last 6 days.
But, and also, like, she really connected with Steven. So Steven here is the kind of odd one out because he is old Hina. Or old Hina. And you have a majority Uli here, but there are those dynamics of Shannon was a part of the Jawan is on the bottom crew that she's been separated a while from. Then you have Sage, who was also part of like that the bottom crew that she got thrown under the bus by Shannon and was trying to make these moves on Kella to kind of let people see what Shannon is doing, of this overly, yes, 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 we're great, we're tied, we need to do this move together because we're best pals. And if Shannon had just like taken a second and rode the waves that she is, you know, meditating about, then we could have seen maybe Steven go here and just have that easy boot. But because she was rustling some feathers, she was the eventual boot here.
I think it's really interesting because Shannon proposes very interesting concept in this episode of this idea that Jawan doesn't offer me anything I don't already have.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the way she's thinking. I really like this thought process. And even in our planning, we kind of talked about this. Like, is this something we can talk about? But it's not really something that people have really discussed on Survivor mm-hmm. before. We haven't really seen a confessional about it before. So it wasn't something we could really latch onto. But I think it's what really leads her into overplaying the situation a little bit. And of course, like, we as, you know, armchair critics can say it's overplaying. Obviously, like, using confirmation bias, we can say it's overplaying because it results in her ouster here. She got this ammunition to get, like, she gave her opposition the ammunition to take her out of this game
mm-hmm.
when she told Sage, hey, let's go for Jawan. But it's that flip-floppiness of, like, that immediate, like, there's a change in the game structure right now. Let me reassess where I am within that and try to change the status quo, even if that's not in my best interest, because I think it's in my best interest. And I think that's where, when we look at our other two examples for this, I think that's where we're really getting with this example, is just this idea that Shannon was not, there is almost zero reason why Shannon should have been the boot this episode.
Yeah.
Like, it should have either have been Steven or Jawan. It should have been that simple. But we saw, as Shannon started targeting Jawan, everything came off Steven too.
Mm-hmm.
So it made it so that it shifted Steven's target to Shannon's instead. And I think that's what we're really trying to highlight.
And I think Peter in Ko Rong really highlights this too, of just, if you just stick with the brains, you make it through. Just mm-hmm. stick with your OG brains. But he was on the bottom of OG brain, so how can he trust them again? So he's trying to then make moves around the brains, and then it just kind of all comes out and gets confuddled and winds up in his ouster, when if he just, you know, stick with the plan, he could have made it to that next phase.
The fascinating thing about that entire Peter boot cycle in Ko Rong is that you already had Aubrey questioning whether she should turn on the brains
mm-hmm.
at that point going in, but had this realization, wait, we have a majority. There's no point in me turning on the brains. We keep this majority. This way we don't get picked off by the beauties. We keep taking the beauties out. We take Julia out here. Mm-hmm. We have a majority. We control the rest of this game.
And we had that realization too in this episode, where it's like, we should keep numbers strong in Uli. We should keep numbers strong. Like, we like MC, but we can't just cut one of our own. We have to keep Hina low. We don't want to eliminate Sophie. Like, there are certain, like, elements of that vote that we see also play out in some of the other tribes as well. Mm-hmm. Like, keep the Uli masses. And Shannon was worried about, like, if I cut Jawan, does that send something back? But we have old Kella. So mm-hmm. there is this, like, mess of the vote that is represented in Ko Rong as well.
Well, and we even have, I think Jawan almost has this, like, Aubrey moment here, where it's this idea of, like, the concern. I think, like, when we look at ultimately what happens in the conclusion of both of these votes, with Shannon going and with Peter going, we have a similar person. We have someone playing a similar role in that decision. In Ko Rong, it's Aubrey. In 49, it's Jawan. Where it's the, okay, but, like, does this alienate my former tribe mates in a way where it like ruins me moving forward in the game. Mm-hmm. And in both situations, you kind of have this realization. It's like, no, that old group with you isn't sticking with you. And like, that's that conversation we see between Sage and Juwan, where Sage is like, Juwan, they're throwing your name out already. Like,
yeah,
we're in a situation where they're throwing your name out. If Shannon feels comfortable getting rid of you now, you leaving doesn't matter to those other people over there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And especially because we knew Shannon would go over with those other people. And our next example is we're going to Alexis Maxwell and Kageyan. And, you know, Mr. Master Kageyan over here, I'll let you kick us off.
So this is the second vote after the swap. So this is after the Cliff boot, after the Lindsay quit. We have Alexis on this beach with the former Brain Tribes and the former Brain Tribe members, plus like a lot of the beauties. Mm-hmm. And you're in the situation where Alexis is kind of throwing out this idea that Jeremiah is the most likely person to flip on the beauties, that there's too much of a concern that Jeremiah is going to flip on the beauties, come emerge, and take away the strength that her, Morgan, Jeffra, and LJ have mm-hmm. moving forward, right? And that's very similar to kind of what we see Shannon proposing about Juwan here. Shannon does propose to the facts of Juwan. It's like, yeah, we have Uli strong, but is everyone going to stick to that? Is Juwan going to stick to that? Juwan's mm-hmm. been on the bottom the entire time. I think Juwan would have stuck Uli strong the entire time. He seemed kind of oblivious to the fact that he was on the bottom.
Yeah. I mean, and we had Sage talking to Juwan being like, all right, we have to get out Shannon because she's closer to the other two that are Rizzo and Savannah. So what are we doing? Where do we factor in Shannon's plans? We don't. And where do you think you factor in Savannah and Rizzo's plans too? Because Sage is kind of opening Juwan's eye to these plans.
Yeah. And there is a little bit of a difference because in Kageyan, there's an inciting incident, which kind of leads people or like leads Alexis down this, which is because this is after the reward challenge where Tony and Wu go to the other camp mm-hmm. and like give an idol clue to Jeremiah that is for the idol on their camp on their right. beach. So like there is this inciting incident where Alexis being led to believe that Jeremiah might flip,
mm-hmm.
but at the same time, it's just a little. It doesn't quite get there in 49,
mm-hmm.
but it's almost like the second swap incites this in 49, where it's like we had a little switch up, here's a bigger switch up, and that's what's inciting this idea that okay, people are going to like have been talking to other people now, and like mm-hmm. Juwan's probably the safest person here because the Ulis. Like those Ulis who ended up on the new Hina tribe, so mm-hmm. Juwan, Nate, Savannah, and Rizzo, they don't really have more connections in the game outside of Sophie B, right? Like, they didn't have the opportunity. So that's the other interesting thing about Shannon and Sage trying to go after Juwan. It almost feels like Shannon is planning on doing this to open herself up, come emerge, mm-hmm. rather than like guarantee someone's not flipping on her.
Right.
And I think like that's what Alexis has going on here, right? Where Alexis wants to get rid of Jeremiah because she wants to get back with LJ and Jeffra and work with them.
Further her own game.
Exactly. Right. Like provide that opportunity to kind of catapult herself forward by lessening the impact of what it looks like these like strong five beauty members all together.
Right, exactly. And unfortunately for Alexis, she meets the same fate of Shannon, and they both go out as this vote right before the merge.
And I think there are similar concerns for like towards Shannon that there were with Alexis, where there's this concern that Shannon gets back with Savannah and Rizzo, and like that's a tight trio you can't really get rid of at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And I think then
you add Nate, there's the four.
Exactly. And I think Sage really had that concern there after seeing what Shannon did on the New Kella tribe and just knowing where her relationships were. There was a lot of discussion as to whether or not this was a good move for Sage to get rid of Shannon here. I think this was a great move for Sage. I think mm-hmm. this opens up the game completely. And I think now that we have this moment, we don't have to have Hina versus Uli. And it makes, hopefully, the back half of the season far more dynamic.
Yeah, I think we have Uli as in Savannah, Rizzo, and Nate.
Mm-hmm.
But Sage is going to go where Sage wants to go. Jawan might go back, question mark, unless Sage has really, you know, impacted him. So with Alexis going here, it does kind of leave Jeremiah in this flux position too, where we have Jawan kind of in this flux position of, do I go to Uli? Do I kind of make new inroads and follow Sage into something? So taking out that I don't want to say power player, but that kind of, you know where they're going player does, mm-hmm. you know, broaden the gameplay.
It's letting the first domino fall.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it is, right? Like, eventually Uli has to turn on each other because that's the nature of Survivor.
Right.
It's just a question of, do they do it right away or do they do it at the end of the game? And this, like, pushing that first domino down, getting Shannon out of there, takes away one of those, like, honestly, like, Shannon might not have been the biggest power player this season, but I think she was a linchpin that would have resulted in Uli kind of pogonging
right.
their way to the end of the game. And now that Shannon, and not because like people liked her generally, or just because like she was a very good strategist, but just because like she was that excessive number that made it so that it was impossible for, like, it made it possible for Uli just to steamroll the post merge.
Yeah.
And because we are now at a point where that's not the case, every tribe has lost at least one player going into a merge, mm-hmm. it invites more dynamic gameplay. And who knows what will happen at this point? Because, I mean, we'll talk about it more when we get to our Outlast, but like, there are a lot of people who have met a lot of people in this game, and it's a new thing that we have not experienced in the new era before.
That's true. There are a bunch of dynamics that will be interesting moving forward into this next phase of the game. But as they're moving into their next phase, we are going into our next out phrase, into outplay. And we are talking the jailbreak challenge, because this is another classic Survivor challenge that when I saw them unearth the sticks and the twine, I was like, no, like, because we keep getting these elements of obstacle course, water, basketball, puzzle, and it's just really refreshing when we get, you know, the last gasp when we first had that introduced back in. Now we get jailbreak, and this is just, it goes all the way back to Thailand. That's the first time we see it, and then has been a staple kind of throughout those middling seasons. And it's rarely used in immunity challenges, which we found out, and it's mainly used in duels.
Yeah, so the weird thing about this challenge, first off, jailbreak, I think, is one of those classic Survivor challenges that we all think mm-hmm. about. It's only been yes. used 9 times, which, again, like, is, you know, a good, it's like 20% of all of Survivor seasons, but it's right. still only 20%. And I think there are just such iconic moments associated with this challenge
mm-hmm.
that it remains a staple in Survivor and something you think about a lot.
Right.
Now,
John's got some stats for you guys.
It's so wild because it's never been used as a reward challenge, but it still isn't predominantly an immunity challenge, which is so weird.
It's a dual challenge.
It's been used 5 times to re-enter the game.
Yeah, or sorry, a re-entry challenge, re-entry.
And 3 of those times were in duel. Well, actually, one of those times wasn't in a duel because one of those duels. It was in the duel.
Okay.
But when it was in a duel or the thruel. We've seen it 3 times as the challenge that brings people back at the merge. in Redemption Island and in both the seasons with Edge of Extinction. It was the final re-entry challenge in Blood versus Water, which I think is probably, would you say it's the most iconic iteration of this challenge, or the most memorable of them?
Like, yes and no. I think purely based on the challenge, yes. Because you have the Tina Katie moment of, I'm gonna unlock this key, are you okay with that? Is like so emotional because you can see their progress in the challenge. Another one that we're not gonna go in depth about that came to my mind was the opening in Second Chances, but that's not because of the challenge itself, it's because that's where Wentworth gets her idol. So I think Blood versus Water definitely does take the cake of like most memorable and most iconic because of the challenge itself with, you know, the dynamics.
I agree. And it's the last time, that's the last time we've seen it in one of these re-entry challenges where it's been at the end of the challenge. We've seen it a lot in the middle of challenges. And we saw that this week in 49, right? It was the middle of the challenge. That's where it was. Yeah. In Edge of Extinction, that's where it was in Winners at War. But it feels so, I don't know, there's this sense of catharsis around it. There's a sense of just accomplishment of opening that gate door at the end of Blood versus Water to walk back into the game. I think the symbolism of it is really strong in that season.
Yeah.
Plus you have this emotional tie of mother-daughter having to face off against each other. Like, it doesn't even matter that Laura Moret's there. Like, it does, because Laura's obviously beasted her way through Redemption Island at this point and is still kicking, still fighting there. But, like, when Tina gets it, and like you said, this is a challenge where we see their progress the entire time. We see how well they're doing. It's like when you saw in this week's episode with 49 and you see Christina's stick just kind of, like, flopping all over the place. And it's just like, this is so disheartening. What's happening? Like, this is so bad. How are you doing this? Especially when we just saw two other tribes do it so strongly, like get their pull working right away. And we get that again in Redemption Island. And when Tina finally gets the key and pulls it over and is just standing there and like double checks with her daughter that it's okay, she goes back into the game.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that she's probably getting voted out immediately upon doing that. And she knows that, right?
Yeah.
Like, she's still a winner. Like, the likelihood of her making it to the end and winning is still pretty low there based on the competition that's left in the game. But just, like, double-checking, it's like, Katie, this is, like, your journey. I brought you here so you could experience Survivor. Are you okay with me going on as our best chance to win the game? There's just such an emotional impact of that moment. Like, there aren't many moments. There are quite a few moments in Survivor where I cry, but there aren't many that are just like a moment in a challenge that makes you cry.
Yeah. Yeah. And aside from the like emotional, like character moments of this challenge, it is also slightly different. And this is also what we typically see with a prisoner's escape is you're behind some form of bar. But here in 49, they were able to just like freehand this. And it was a little bit easier because they didn't have to like navigate it through a gate of any kind or a small opening. They could just like fling it close to them. Not having that gate almost... it wasn't as like prisoners escapee, I guess, because they have the gate.
Yeah, I mean, it is jailbreak, but there's nothing they're really breaking. They're just getting a key in order to open a lock for balls, right?
Yeah.
But it's also interesting, and I think this is kind of where I like having the gate there, not because it's an obstacle or anything like that, but it gives a visual representation of the struggle to get this, right? When we see Christina on the mat there and her poles whipping around all over the place, we don't really see the struggle in Christina because we don't see her like straining to get through.
Yeah, the gate. It's that like arm through the gate. And our other example we wanted to talk about is the Outcast re-entry where they have to do this challenge. And it's so fun that all the materials are just like scattered around, and you know, they have to try and like do this challenge through the gate, grab the keys to gain their way, their possible chance back in the game. They also do that kind of thing in Amazon as well, with like scattering the stuff on the floor. And I just think having like the tribe with you during it, trying to help out, how do we get more keys going at once? There's more of a like tribal camaraderie with the, that could be had with this challenge, though I do like the solo struggle, because the hero roles are important in challenges too. I feel that it's not, it doesn't just need to be tribe members doing things together.
Yeah, and of course, in this challenge, you had one person as the designated rescuer, and they went through the stations to build up to it as well.
Right.
And I think that's what's fascinating. It's also, obviously, it's one of the most ridiculous twists in Survivor history. It might be the worst twist in Survivor history. I mean, no one really likes re-entry twists in the first place, but this one also had the awkwardness of the outcast having real food before coming back into the game.
Mm-hmm.
But it also felt like the way that this challenge was designed, where if the outcasts outright win, two of them come back in the game, both Drake and Morgan have to vote someone out that will be replaced by them.
Mm-hmm.
Or
if one tribe wins,
the other tribe goes to tribal and gets a member from the outcast voted onto them. And then the fact that the outcasts do win,
mm-hmm.
like it has that iconicness of like, oh yes, this is literally people who have been removed from the game. You have, you know, the die jerks buff and everything, right? Like there's resentment in these people, and you see them fighting for that chance to get back into the game.
Yeah.
And it's, I think that makes it so, so compelling. And again, mm-hmm. it's that struggle, that reach, like going for it in order to unlock the cage so you can get out and claim your place back in the game, potentially. Mm-hmm. Because there were six outcasts. There were six outcasts at this point, and only two of them were coming back into the game. So to see this group of disgruntled players who have been voted out of the game come back, compete together, and then ultimately win in mm-hmm. what I don't think production expected to have happen at all. I don't think production expected the outcasts to straight up win.
Because they are in a day and age of let's vote out the weakest challenge mm-hmm. people first. So you have a tribe of a bunch of weaker challenge people. Then you have tribes that are perceived because they voted out some of their more weak members to have like more cream of the crop situation. But it's not necessarily like that when you have people with motivation and a purpose, like more than just we want to win immunity. Like it's like, I don't know, plus there's more heart.
This challenge kind of benefits smaller people who are usually the people who are voted out in these early seasons of Survivor, right? Where it's like, okay, we have these small lanky people who can reach things, like reach through things further and everything like that, right?
Me, Ryan.
Yeah, exactly. But they also kind of just benefit from the fact that Burden got blindsided in the early portion of the game and was on that challenge too, right? Like,
there's
just this weird culmination of it. But I think it as much as like Tina going through that gate really has this like thematic purpose of re-entry into the game,
mm-hmm.
this has the we're breaking out of this prison you've put us into to wreak havoc on you.
Yeah, it has that like, raw, you know, pirate vibe to it for sure. And that's why I love the jailbreak challenge, is because it does give so many different emotions just from a challenge and the situation that the challenge is in. Like I got excitement from the first time that someone was doing it, then Christina struggling of not being able to put the poll together. And it's like, oh, this is classic. Like I'm reliving some of like Survivor nostalgia through it. So this challenge really does provide a lot of different emotional like feelings just based on the scenario that it's put in.
And it feels like since we haven't seen it in 9 seasons, it just kind of feels like a return to a warm friend.
Yeah, right?
Right? Like we said this obviously with like Last Gasp when it premiered and everything like that, but this is one of those things that going into 50, it's really good to see Survivor doing this type of thing again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Like, I loved the addition with second chances of getting also second chance shots at challenges as well, because it just adds that, like, I don't know, feel good nostalgia to the season as well.
Yeah. I mean, I honestly, McKenna, you're the challenge person out of the two of us on this podcast. You prefer the challenge aspect of the game more than I do, but I loved both of these challenges. I thought they were innovative. I like the fact that
Frisbees. Look at that.
Yeah, frisbees, right? Like, it's just something like so simple that we've just never seen in a challenge in 49 seasons. Like, okay, that's
pretty cool. We have ring toss, but not a frisbee.
Not a frisbee, exactly. So that was different, right? It was different. And you could tell which of those people disc golf just by the form they had when they were throwing those discs. Let me tell you. But then also like this immunity challenge where it was like a relay, essentially, right? Like the tribe, you had one tribe member doing one thing in each different part.
And you couldn't, you had to have like one dedicated person per part slash two with the table maze. But
and like the table maze again, like we talked about the evolution of the table maze previously in the rewind, right? But like having two people do that table maze makes it so much more interesting. We've seen that before, but like we've also seen it with one person. It's just these little variations for once. And like no puzzle. There was no puzzle in any of these challenges. Like
there haven't been actually puzzles like or many of them post swap.
We haven't had a puzzle since
before the swap. That's what I thought.
So this is just exciting. It's exciting to see a bit of innovation and change in the challenge design after so long of us craving some sort of different thing going on with these challenges.
And I know we would love to continue to talk challenges, but we are going into our Outlast, which actually comes from the one and only Kyle Durrett. And that is hitting every tribe before and including the merge tribe. So they have gotten the Hina buff, the Uli buff, the Kella buff, and the soon to be named merge buff.
This is assuming that we don't have like Mergatory next week.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I don't think we do. Like, I watched that preview like a hawk to see if there were buffs on everyone. Everyone we see has a buff, but there are some people we don't see, so I can't tell for sure.
Yeah. So this is Jawan, Christina, and Sophie with an E. They all have touched every tribe and have gotten to don every buff, which I think is also a fun thing. Like when I've played live Survivor games, I always want to swap to a new beach or a new, you know, buff to kind of hit all the different, say like, ooh, I collected them all in the season. I think that's just like a fun little thing that happens to some people if they swap. And having the multiple swaps in a season gets some people to that. And so we are going to go with All Stars, and that's Jenna and Rupert. There's that asterisk of Jerry, but she doesn't make the merge.
Yeah. So it's really interesting here because what we see in 49 is because of two distinct tribe swaps. And just so all you listeners know, like the caveat is that there has to be two changes of tribes in the pre-merge section for this to count. Otherwise, like so many people have like started on one tribe, swapped to the other, and then made the merge. And that's it, right?
Right.
These are people who have accumulated at least 4 buffs in a single season. And with All Stars, it's interesting because we kind of get the dissolution of a tribe.
Right.
Right? Like, we get the dissolution.
Yeah, Saboga gets, like, dissolved into the other two tribes. And then from that dissolve, you had an actual swap.
Yeah, and the funny thing about it is...
also actual swap.
Yeah, well, that's the funny thing about it, right? it's a random swap where they're just taking buffs off a plate and everything. Like it's a plate. Urn?
No,
urn.
They're
everyone in the same urn. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, every member of
Shapara swaps over to Mogo,
except for Amber.
Yep. And then vice versa, all of Mogo goes over to Shapara.
Yeah. So it's weird. It's a weird instance. But because of that, it makes it so that Jenna Lewis, because there are two Jennas.
Oh, that's right. Look at the thumbnail. Jenna Lewis.
Jenna Lewis and Rupert, who started on Saboga, got dissolved into Shapira, and then swapped to Mogo, got all four buffs from All Stars.
Mm-hmm. Which is also a little bit like nomadic. Like, where is your home? Too, like, these people have like a home with certain people, but because they've been swapped around so much, it's probably a lot harder to navigate the game of like, I don't have a common beach, I don't have a common, you know, ally because they swap somewhere. Like, Jawan moved with some of his Ulis to his new beach, but then when he swapped again, he was away from those people that he was just with. Even though they were OG Uli, it's still not people that he was around for a while. So it was like, Christina has Sophie, but you know, where do other connections lie in that as well? So it's like not having some of those commonalities. And especially in a dissolve, Jenna mm-hmm. and Rupert only have themselves.
Right, they have each other.
Yeah, and that's what
we
I
see
mean.
That throughout the entire game, right? Like, they make it to Final Four together with Rob and Amber because of mm-hmm. that. And I think it's really interesting when we contrast that to 49, where the two people who have been with each other on three separate tribes, like the three different tribes, I mean, mm-hmm. we could say three separate tribes as well when we consider, like, Sage and Shannon at the same time, too. But, like, they're butting heads, right? Christina and Sophie are butting heads.
Mm-hmm.
Christina keeps saying, yeah, we'll just say Sophie's the decoy. And Sophie's like, F that noise. Like, I don't want that. Get out of here.
Why? You could be the vote. Okay, bye.
Which is just so different than what we see from Jenna and Rupert, who just like lock onto each other, right?
Yeah.
And lock in as a pair. They're like, okay. And I think that part of that just comes from like,
also having to vote together beforehand, too.
That also helps, right? Like, the thing is like, Christina and Sophie haven't had to vote with each other, and they're kind of, like, chomping at the bit. I think that is something, right? Like, we talk about it a lot with, like, tribes. We spend a lot of time looking at the disaster tribe side of the new mm-hmm. era. But if we look at the tribes that are, like, the dominant tribes, even when we look at, like, you know, Tandang in Philippines, right? Tribes start chomping at the bit to, like... Mm-hmm. eat each other off, right? Even yeah. like, look at Galu in Samoa, mm-hmm. right? Like, these dominant tribes like eating each other off when they get the opportunity to, because it's the first time they get to play the game. And yeah. taking the easy vote doesn't feel like playing the game sometimes.
Yes. And then I also wanted to talk about Savage and Second Chances, because that game is crazy. Also, dear patrons, we are going to hit you with a good episode this week. We are watching Cambodia episode 6, Bunking with the Devil. So go watch that so you can listen to us this weekend. And this is where Savage swaps off of Angkor and the hellscape that was. And he now dons a new buff and can maneuver the game through to KO. He started off at Bayon, and he has made some new connections over on Angkor. He has his old group from Bayon, and now he's on to KO Beach. And it's just a big, like, circle of kind of hell that he's living in, that he's like, all right, mentally, I'm good on my tribe. Yeet. Onto the terrible, worst beach tribe ever. And then now he's pushed into what he feels is like a great position.
Yeah. And I mean, he kind of gets that like Shannon moment too, right? Of
mm-hmm.
being having a majority, like a strong majority in Bion, mm-hmm. and saying, I don't really want to like throw Wu as the decoy vote instead for this Spencer boot because like Wu's my boy.
Yeah.
Just like Shannon does with Steven. I mean, it's Steven's obviously like supposed to be mm-hmm. the actual target in this episode and everything, but it's just fascinating to see, like, you know, the more Survivor changes, the more it stays the same.
And also how Savage is like so fearful, like his mm-hmm. turn of events with the tribe swap, always so fearful of a tribe swap because that's where he loses his control. Mm-hmm. And then now after being on Angkor, he was like, blessed be a tribe swap. Like yeah. he's now in the new school game of mixing and matching, moving and grooving, and kind of keeping up with the times here because he, you know, was miserable during a tribe swap.
Yeah, it's really fascinating because, and I think this is one of the things that's so interesting just in regards to a second tribe swap in general, right? Like we are seeing, we don't get many second tribe swaps. We've only mm-hmm. had it a handful of times. We've had it in All-Stars. Well, All-Stars, again, like, asterisks because it's technically like the desolation
yeah, version. Yeah.
We have it in
Game Changers,
Second Chances, Ghost Island. Is that it?
Pretty close.
Yeah, right? Like, this is something new. It's very clear, as Phil always says, like, the season prior to all returning season is testing things out. This is clearly testing things out for Survivor 50 because when you have pre-gaming, the best way to eliminate the possibility of pre-gaming in an all-returning season, mm-hmm. mix everyone up as much as possible.
Yeah, exactly. And I think this mix and match makes for, like, adding the second tribe swap, even if it's just for a vote, that one vote can create a bond with someone for the merge. So Savage being able to navigate this vote with having Wu, who's not OG Bion, and having that other connection, then having Abby, who he voted with on Angkor, and having a bunch of OG Bion as well, kind of keeping him connected. He feels like the way that this swap and that the dynamics are working for him, and having this second tribe swap is almost giving him more allies and power in the game, but unfortunate for him with Wu going. He just got a little bit too big for his britches, but the second tribe swap really introduces a lot of great dynamics into the game, and it also is really fun when you can like be like Pokemon and collect them all. So
I think the fascinating thing about this, and just like this tribe swap in general, the second tribe swap, the idea of a second tribe swap, how it messes things up, look at how much people were kind of talking about how it was unfun how this first tribe swap happened in 49, mm-hmm. where it was like the 4-2-1 on both tribes.
Right.
And it's like, oh, well, this doesn't really do anything. Like, yeah, okay, it probably saves Sophie and Alex, but it doesn't really promote any, like, interesting gameplay because the majority just votes for the two in the mm-hmm. minority, right? Like, we got two of the weaker episodes of the season because they were very predictable boots. It right. was like, that first one was like, is it matter, Jason? And the second one was like, which tribe loses? Oh, it's Jason going home.
Right.
But this swap changed that dynamic because now all of a sudden we see people having to reintroduce themselves to people. And I think mm-hmm. I think when it came to Cambodia, we still really had those OG tribes strong.
Yeah.
Right? Like that still persisted into the merge. And I think until we get like voting blocks and stuff like that.
We did see on both sides of like Savage
yeah.
with Wu and then Joe with Wentworth too.
Yeah.
Of like cross tribal, but at the same time, don't you dare cross tribe. And we see that a little bit in 49 of like, why are you doing this? Don't cross tribe.
And I think like in the 39 day game, mm-hmm. the second swap doesn't help mix things up as much as it would in the 26 day game. I think I think what we see here is
it's
the second swap in Cambodia almost suggests you go OG Tribe Strong again because it's the mm-hmm. safer thing to do because you've established your relationship with them, right? Like
right.
before that first swap is how long they had before this second swap in this game mm-hmm. in the current season. Whereas in this one, because like if you keep the new era kind of ever changing and swapping a lot, yeah, it takes up a lot of episodes. You got 90 minutes now, it's fine. sure, logistically, it's probably a nightmare to like move these people from beach to beach all the time. However, it changes the dynamic. It makes it so that people aren't just like working with the same people because they happen to be on the beach with that person the entire time. So I think what we've seen here, and again, hopefully, right? Like hopefully moving forward, this introduces a new dynamic into the game where people are more willing to talk to each other. Mm-hmm. And when we look at those old tribes, like those, the old times this has happened, that's not the case. Everyone kind of sticks with their original group through a second tribe swap because it's safe. But in the new era, I think we're going to see a little more mix and matching here because of a second mm-hmm. tribe swap. And like, just hopeful that that's what happens in that next season that's happening too. 50.
Yeah. All right. Well, that is our show. So make sure you tune into Patreon this weekend where we're going to talk some Cambodia. John, what else do we got going on in the Specialist universe?
Well, Phil and Will had a rather heated discussion about this tribe swap on the recap on Wednesday. So make sure to check that out if you haven't already. Phil was joined by Bruce from 44 and 45 earlier on Digging Deeper. No Blake this week. But Bruce is there and gives a lot of great insight into the game. So make sure you check that out. Right before this, McKenna and Kyle broke down the latest episode of The Amazing Race. Maybe the most boring episode of The Amazing Race yet, but the season's still kind of delivering.
There was still episode one. So I'm going to say this was better than episode one. But yes, if you're not watching The Amazing Race, do so and get caught up because Kyle and I have a lot of fun over there.
On Sunday, Phil will be joined by Cassidy from season 43 for the Predictions of Power Rankings. That should be a great podcast. Always great to have Cassidy out. And then Tegwith is being joined by Star from last season on Tuesday. You know that's going to be a fun conversation. So make sure you check out Matt Chat on Tuesday. And then we do it all again next week over on the Patreon. Every Season Matter is tackling One World right now. It's an interesting season to talk about. It might not be the best season to watch, but it's an interesting season to talk about, that's for sure. All that other stuff. McKenna and I talking Cambodia this weekend. There's so many more things on Patreon. Phil and I have been talking horror movies all week on Tuesdays, so make sure you check that out. Make sure you like the video, subscribe to the channel, and we will see you next week.
Goodbye.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.